right. So can you start by introducing yourself, telling me your name, age, nationality, and how long you've lived in Lewiston?
Yes, my name is Phyllis Rand. I'm 61 years old. I'm African American, and I lived in Lewiston for 37 years.
And where in Lewiston, what neighborhood in Lewiston, what part of Lewiston have you lived in or do you live in?
I live in the area near Bates College.
Okay.
It's actually across from Bates College. I go for walks up there, back roads.
Okay. And so you've lived in Lewiston for 37 years, you said?
Yes.
And in your time there, have you either been in or been familiar with Little Canada?
Yes, I've been familiar with Little Canada, and I know people who, I knew people who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I am also a disaster volunteer, so and there have been fires down there, and so my organization has helped people who've been burned out of their apartments in that area.
Wow, okay. I definitely want to come back to that as we go through the interview. But I guess one of the things I want to ask you about is your relationship to Lewiston. How and why did you come to Lewiston, and why have you stayed?
I met my husband in Washington, D.C. We were working at the same place. He's a private research library, and he's a native Mainer, and we started dating. He took me up to Maine to visit his parents. I fell in love with Maine, and I'd always known, I'm originally from North Carolina, I always knew that I wanted to live in New England just because of the weather and four seasons and that sort of thing. And so I really, really loved Maine. They lived in Reedfield, Maine, but it was hard finding jobs living in Washington, D.C. after we got married and trying to find a job in Maine remotely. Back then, it was just the beginning of the internet, so it wasn't like we had a lot of Googling or anything
like that.
So my mother-in-law had a friend who was gonna do missionary work in Kentucky, and she needed a house sitter for the summer, and she lived in Lewiston. So that was our chance to get to Maine. And then once we got to Maine, then we looked for jobs. And that was how I found a job at W.S. Liberty, which is a textile mill in Lewiston.
Okay.
And so I got that job like 2 weeks after moving to Maine.
Oh, wow.
So.
Okay, and so this is the mill that you worked in?
Yes.
Wait, tell me about like how long did you work there? What were the conditions like?
I wasn't there very long. I was there for a little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in what they call the laboratory. It was, we mostly did process control testing on the material that we were using to make items. Like at the time, one of our big items was fire retardant vertical blinds.
Okay.
And so I would do things like, there were specifications on those vertical blinds. I did something called a burn test. You put a strip of the fabric in a chamber, and then you set it on fire, and you see how far up it burned from 1 to 15 seconds. And that determined whether or not that rolled of fabric passed the fire retardancy test. So that was one of that's sort of the things I did. That was on a finished product. We also had raw material that came in, and we had to test to make sure that it was a high enough quality to make the products that we were making. We made bulletproof vests. And we made fire retardant vest and clothing material, that sort of thing. Some material had to be a certain strength as far as wear and tear goes, so I did what's called a burst test,
okay,
where actually put the fiber on this, it's called a Mullins burst machine, and you crank it and crank it and crank it and see how much pressure that material can stand before it gets torn.
Oh, okay.
And another thing we did was color matching. If a client said, I want my vertical blinds to be this color and came in with this swatch,
okay,
then in the laboratory, we had to come up with formulations of how much green, how much red, you know, that sort of thing, and come up with a formula for to match that color. And then we, on a small scale, then we had fabric in the lab. We dipped it into that material, set it through a machine, and dried it, and then checked to see if the color matched. If the color matched, then we would send that formula to the dye house,
okay,
where they made that on a larger scale based on our formulations on a smaller scale. You know, I had to multiply by X number in order to
and the was that also in the mill?
Yes.
So everything was in-house?
Yes. Yes. Yep.
And so did you need any special training before you got the job? Did you learn on the job?
I learned on the job. And that's what most people did. My boss was a chemist, so he was the ultimate decider of the chemical formulations for the colors, that sort of thing. But, no, I mean, I learned on the job, and I learned quickly.
Okay. And what were sort of the hours like and the atmosphere? Did you work with other people, or was it very solitary?
The laboratory, we usually had a total of three laboratory people plus my supervisor. It was a revolving door in the lab, though, because people couldn't get along with my supervisor.
Okay.
And so they would only stay, less than 6 months because they just couldn't get along with him. He was difficult, but you just learn to get along with people.
Yeah.
So there was that, and then I saw the other people during breaks, guys from the dye house and shipping and scheduling. I saw them during breaks. It was very hot.
Hot?
Very hot. Because we had ovens in the laboratory that we used to dry the fabrics,
okay,
so they had to be a certain temperature, and the mill itself was just all brick. So if even in this fall, it's nice and cool outside, you go in there and the bricks would just, they retain heat, the bricks that made up the mill, and it was so hot in there.
Wow. So how did you stay cool?
Well, I had a fan. There was one conference room that had air conditioning, but we didn't. We didn't go in there.
Wow. Okay. So no air conditioning, hot conditions, and the hours, was it like 9 to 5 Monday to Friday?
It was 7 to 3:30.
Okay.
And a lot of back in the heyday of the mills, that's where all the mills, those were all the, everybody got out at the same time, because there were several mills in Lewiston.
Right.
And they all got out at the same time. So a little bit of a traffic jam.
Oh, wow. And when you worked there for 2 years, do you remember, recall what years those were?
It was 87 to 89.
87 to 89. And were there other women, black folks who worked in the mill or in the lab?
There were plenty of women.
Okay.
As far as I heard of a young black man who worked somewhere in the mill, but I never met him. And as far as I knew, I was the only black person I ever saw who worked there.
And so you left after being there for 2 years.
Yes.
What did you go on to do after that?
My background was water and wastewater treatment technology, and there was an opening at the wastewater treatment plant that serves the cities of Lewiston and Auburn. So that's where I started working as quality control technician. I went on, one of the things that the wastewater treatment plant does is because the plant is designed to treat biological waste that come in, with the industries, they're discharging other things, non-biological waste, they're discharging waste that have heavy metals in it, that sort of thing. So they have limits on what they can discharge. They have limits for, like, copper that they can discharge to the wastewater treatment plant. One of my duties was to go to those industries, set up my sampling equipment, collect sample over 24 hours, and have analyzed for those pollutants to see whether or not they're within their limits. And I also did inspections. I went around and I, where are your wet processes? Where are your floor drains? What chemicals are you using? Where are your chemicals stored? Let me see your hazardous waste manifest to make sure they went to a hazardous waste landfill rather than to the sewer, that sort of thing. So I did that for 19 and a half years. And it was right in Lewiston.
And currently, what are you doing?
Well, after I left my job in Lewiston, I got a job with the Maine Department of Environmental Protection, where I actually wrote permits for wastewater treatment plants. And I really enjoyed that. It sort of, everything came full circle because, you work at a treatment plant, you don't always know all the rhyme or reason behind why the treatment plant has this limit, that limit, and these requirements. But then when I became a permit writer, I learned all that. So, came full circle. I did that for 4.5 years, and then the wastewater treatment plant in Augusta needed someone to manage the laboratory. And so the chief operator called me and asked me if I would work there. Okay. And so that's where I am right now, in Augusta.
Okay. Oh, so you commute to work?
Yes.
And do you have any friends networked from your days of being in the mills at all, or since they closed down?
Do I have any friends what?
Friends or colleagues, networked from being in the mill?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't see anybody. I knew people.
Right.
I didn't really hang out with them. For the most part, I was treated well by my coworkers. There was one person who was in the lab who, at break time, she'd sit at our table and tell black jokes. I was just like, am I really hearing this? And, this was, like I said, I just moved to Maine. And it was just something I never, down south, I talked to talk about black people behind their backs. But this person was just straight up. And I was just like, huh? And nobody at the table said anything. She thought she was funny, but nobody reacted. And I don't know why I never said anything to her about her to my boss, but I guess somebody else did, because before I knew it, she wasn't working in the lab anymore. And one time we were, the whole mill, we had to do inventory, and somebody, and there was coffee, and somebody asked this guy, how would you like a coffee? And he made a terrible joke. I like my coffee like I like my women, black and strong, or something like that. And I just kept it moving, right? But it couldn't have been more than an hour later, he came up to me and apologized. And, because I think somebody, ran away. And he was very sincere.
Right.
He just thought he was being funny, and I don't know. But, so, other than that, I had no problems with the people I worked with. They were just good people.
Yeah.
I did have to learn a few things. My boss, we would have to write stuff on a report to get my boss, and he had to sit me down and tell me there are certain ways that I cannot write. For example, I wrote something at Cubic Yards, you know, that put YD with the superscript 3, Cubic Yards. And he said, you know, you have to write it out. Because people here will think you're trying to be better than that.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was that sort of thing. Because, you know.
Interesting. So, you know, I hear that and I think about, you know, like class dynamics, education dynamics in the workplace. Were those types of divisions, you know, like visibly apparent, or just kind of something that you only notice when your boss maybe pulled you to the side? And
the language, you know, the grammar, just the attitude of, you know, it was less than refined, should I say.
Okay.
And I just kind of learned that I needed to ratchet it back a little bit. Just because I didn't want people thinking that I thought that I was better than them.
Okay.
It was the same at the first wastewater treatment plant that I worked at. It was suggested that I not use 3-syllable words. Yeah. I mean, we're talking Lewiston, people who lived in Little Canada, you know, that sort of thing. I had one coworker who didn't even know the concept of using a shower.
Okay.
You know, he thought you turn it on and then you sit on the floor.
Okay.
He learned when he was in gym class, I guess, and the guys were like, what are you doing? And, you know, that's just, and his first language was French, even though he was born and raised in Houston. So there's definitely class distinction.
Right.
You know, I had some college, and yeah, it was things that I normally would have done just because that's what I do. I had to, you know, be more conscious and aware. Okay. Of what I was saying and how I was saying.
Okay. And, right, so you mentioned, right, having a co-worker whose first language is French, living in Little Canada. Did folks speak French in the factory? Was that fairly common, or?
I think it was fairly common, okay. Yeah. Yep.
In the lab, or not as much in the lab?
Not so much in the lab. Actually, I don't, you know, just maybe a word here or there, but my boss was Italian.
Oh, okay.
He was of Italian descent. His wife was of French descent. Most of the people worked there, you know, had French surnames, but it was most of the people who worked in like the carding room or the where the looms were. That tended to speak French, so older.
Okay. And so, do you have a sense of where you fell when you worked there, sort of like on that age spectrum? Were you younger than a lot of the folks you worked with, or right in the middle, or?
I was more on the younger side.
Okay.
I was in my middle 20s. So, but one of the things that I really sort of helped me feel good was one of my coworkers, Sue, her husband worked at the paper mill in Jay, and so she'd been working in the lab not as long as I did, but anyway, we got to get to, you know, we worked together, and I really liked her. My husband and I only had one car. So Sue would go right by where we lived, and I forgot when the homeowner came back from her missionary work. We stayed in an apartment in Auburn for a little while. Sue would go by there, so we had an arrangement. She picked me up, and you know, I'd give her $5 for gas.
Right.
And stuff. So we got to know each other. And I remember one time we were in the lab, and somebody said something about someone, and Sue said, well, Phyllis is just folks, you know?
Just folks.
Yeah, and I felt really good about that because, you know, I knew she's you know, we were cool.
Right.
And she accepted me that, you know, I wasn't trying to be pretentious or you know, think I was better than her.
So, are there other, you know, memories that you have of the mill, either sort of fond or not so fond, or?
Just, you know, you were talking about our shift, our hours. One thing is, every year, the mill shut down, I believe it was at Easter. It wasn't a choice, it was, this is how it is. Because a lot of the people who were there were Catholic. So that was a mandatory shutdown. And then another mandatory shutdown was in July because that was just the way it was. All in all, I don't have any bad memories. I just remember it being very hot. And, you know, I did have to kind of police myself to make sure that I didn't come across some kind of way of, you know, being, you know, too smart.
Right.
So, because I, you know, I want to get along with people and I like them and I didn't want any barrier because they thought I was, they couldn't talk to me.
Right.
Another one funny, I don't know what's funny, it's kind of macabre. The carding room, what a carding, I don't know if you know anything about carding. So you have the fabric, it's like a polyester or fluffy.
Okay.
And then this machine that has these teeth.
Okay.
And it pulls, it stretches it to make the that ball of fluff into a layer. And then it can be layered on each other to make a thicker fabric.
Okay.
Or it can be put inside of material. Well, this girl who worked in, she worked in a different department, she always came into the lab dropping off stuff. The carding room, I guess, like almost everybody who worked there had lost at least one finger.
Whoa.
Because yeah, that machine was just, and her husband had just relocated from one department into the carding room, and sure enough, he lost a finger, and his co-workers, when they came to visit him, they gave him finger sandwiches and lady fingers, and yeah.
Wow. So that was just sort of a common thing.
Yes. That you lose a body part.
So even before he started, he knew that this was going to be a possibility.
Yeah, that's everybody. That people just lose, you know, lose body parts.
Wow. And so it wasn't a tragedy for anyone, it seems.
No. It was a gallows humor type of thing. Gallows humor. Here you go, the lady fingers.
Wow. So those were the conditions. It was just so prevalent that everyone knew those were the conditions.
They bring in finger food.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, that's, I think, you know, why, you know, understanding, right, the culture and the norms of the mills is one of those sort of really important, you know, things to understand historically, right?
I was horrified. But then she just came down and she was laughing and talked about what they brought them to. And yeah, welcome to the club.
Yeah, right. That sort of writes us sort of a lot about sort of social norms and expectations of the space.
Now, I did get my hand caught in the machine in the laboratory. You've seen those old timey wash machines where they put the fabric in and they pull it out. Well, we have one. It's called a pad dyer. It was hot. It was electric. So it's, you know, and so that piece of fabric, we would dip it to color match.
Okay.
We would dip it into the little trough that had the color, the pigments, and we feed it to the pad dyer. So the pad dyer, it was two pieces, and it would just squeeze the excess water out, just like those old timey washing machines. Well, I don't know if I was daydreaming. I'm not sure what happened, but I was at the pad dryer and I was feeding the fabric in. Next thing I knew, my hand was going through the machine. And I tried to pull it out, but it was still trying to pull me in. And my boss was, and I didn't, I was just so trying to get it out that I didn't scream or yell for help or anything. But my boss, I guess he heard the machine making a weird sound, so he came down and he saw, and he hit the emergency stop and, you know, opened it up, and, you know, the skin on my hand was raw, and these two fingernails were pulled off because I was pulling one way and it was pulling the other, and I broke the tip of one of my fingers.
So what happens in those situations? Did you go to the hospital?
They have a workers' comp clinic.
Okay.
It's like Concentra or somewhere like that, where it's kind of like urgent care place, but the mill had a contract with them that had medical services, and so I went there. And
it was in the mill?
No.
Okay.
It was outside. And got my hand x-rayed and all that, but it was very painful.
It sounds it. And is it accurate to say that people experience injuries?
Yeah. Actually, another person who started in the lab, she had been in other departments, but then she, I don't know if she didn't get along with people or what, but anyway, she started working in the lab and she got her hand pulled through.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So, it wasn't as bad as mine. I think it was her pinky. I can't remember which one it was, but it wasn't. It wasn't as bad as mine. I didn't think my nails were going to go back regularly, but when they first came back in, they looked like animal nails. So it's very thick and rigid, and then when they grew out, they kept going out.
And this was this before or after your friend's husband lost his
It was before.
It was before. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I hadn't been working there long.
Okay.
They said was that my boss said that he's noticed the people who get the most injuries are the ones who just started and the ones who've been working there a long time. But I don't think Wendy's husband, I mean, she wasn't much older than me. But he just, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it was so common, so prevalent to have these injuries happen.
Yeah, it was like, it was not a big thing.
And so, you know, the next question I have, if it applies to the mill, great, if not, that's okay. But we've been asking everyone that we interview about how you define community. And so it could be, if you had a community in the mill, right, but or just sort of generally in Lewiston or beyond.
I think it is a bit of oil and water. You know, that you've got the people who were descendants of the mills, and then you have the new people, which, you know, and I think I'm in between, because I'm not a recent immigrant, but I'm not, you know, a white male worker. And I've seen, I'm encouraged with the city. I think that, you know, I was here when we had the first influx of Somali immigrants, and my church was actually the church that came up with the idea of having a march to support the immigrants. And I don't know if you heard anything about that. This was after the mayor of Lewiston wrote a letter.
Yep.
Well, my pastor decided that she wanted to for our church to have a march through the downtown just to show solidarity with the new immigrants. And other pastors heard about it, and then other people heard about it, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. So it ended up being huge. There were kids from northern Maine came down on school buses for this march, because a lot of the schools in Maine have civil rights clubs.
Right.
And so the civil rights clubs came down, and I think there were over 3,000 people who came from all areas of the state to this march, and then there was a big event at Bates.
Right.
And my husband chuckled because I was on the planning committee, but he chuckled because I was one of the security people. I figured this is my community. I
right.
want to do what I want to do.
Right.
And it was very heartwarming. The interesting thing was, you know, this was a show of solidarity, but there were no people, there were no immigrants, there were no Somalis involved. They didn't come. They weren't there. I don't blame them, because, you know, the concern about, violence. But I think that we've come a long way since then, Lewiston has. And even though we still see ignorance and racism within our community, I do think that I feel optimistic. And I do think, you know, I'm not trying to talk you up or anything, but I do think Bates College has a lot to do with helping us in that area. Just having a school of the magnitude Bates stay in Lewiston is a big deal. But yeah, you know, my kids growing up, there were some issues with some of their teachers that we have. But like I said, we stayed because this is one of the few communities in Maine that was somewhat diverse. And I thought that was important for my kids, to be around other kids who were not white.
Right. And I want to sort of follow up on that with you. Can you tell me a bit more about your family and the types of activities that you and your family did together? It sounds like you all went to church.
Mm-hmm.
And you all have other families you hung out with or activities you did?
So I have a son and a daughter. And they went through the entire Lewiston school system, public school system. My husband, who is white, grew up in Greenfield, but he had family roots in Lewiston. His grandfather was an orthopedic surgeon at Central Maine Medical Center and lived in Lewiston with my husband's uncle. And so they went to church in downtown Lewiston. And so since we were able to live in Lewiston, after we got a house, we started going to that church as well, downtown Lewiston. My son was in sports in high school, but the main thing was the strings program. He was in fourth grade. A couple of musicians from the Portland Symphony Orchestra visited the school and played their instruments. And one of them was a cellist, and Danny really liked it. And plus, it was an instrument that you could play while sitting down. But he couldn't. They didn't do cello for kids until they were in fifth grade. So he played violin in fourth grade. And then we get Ron to switch to cello because he was such a good musician on a violin. But eventually he gave in. He tried to turn a guitar into a cello.
Oh wow! Yeah, fine.
Yeah, I was like, okay, we're done with that. So because of my kids, we were kind of out in the community. My husband and I are kind of introverted, and so, you know, we don't go out about much, but, you know, we did to support our kids. And while I was involved in wastewater treatment, I got more involved and eventually became the president of the main organization of wastewater professionals. Eventually became president of the New England Ward Association, and they're very supportive. So we got to know people in church,
okay.
And some of them, you know, it's like, just, if you don't know what to say to a black person, they just don't say anything, you know. And after a while, that was just got to me, and I mean, they tried to be nice and everything, but it was exhausting. And, you know, just the guy comes up to me and tells me about his one black friend, and and, you know, and they would look at me like, do you know him? You know, sort of thing. And every time he came to talk to me, he'd tell me about that one black friend. Like, there was nothing else that we could discuss. So there are a few people like that. It was just,
yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
My husband and I started, I mean, I was in a choir and all that. My husband and I started riding our bicycles a lot, and I just found it was much nicer riding my bike on a Sunday than going to church on Sunday. So that's what I did.
And so, just sort of, you actually touched on a good amount of the questions I had. But I'll follow up. Are there any particular traditions or customs that you and your family practice?
Not anymore. When my mother-in-law, father-in-law were alive, the families would get together because, again, my husband's from Maine, so his family, throughout Maine, and we would, every Thanksgiving, get together, and every New Year's, get together, and 4th of July, get together. And, but since they passed away, nobody's really trying to organize anything. And his uncle, who lived in Lewiston, he just passed away. He was in his 90s. So, you know, there's really no reason to, you know, we all
and so then this brings me to my next question about if you participate in politics, or what role politics plays in your life, if any.
I had participated in this initiative called Emerge Maine.
Okay.
E-M-E-R-G-E.
Okay.
Emerge Maine. It's an organization that encourages women of any political party to run for office.
Oh, yes. Okay. I've heard of this.
And so I got involved in that. But it just seemed like, and that was a time when Paula Page was governor. And I was just, I don't know, I was so jaded by that point. I said, you know what? I don't think I want to do this. So I never ran for any kind of office. I'm on the Lewiston Planning Board of Appeals. And I've been doing that for for a number of years now. And that's okay. You know, at one point I thought about running for mayor and stuff, but I don't want people calling me on my phone all the time. I just don't want it.
Yeah.
But maybe someday I will.
Yeah. A couple more questions we have is the one, the role of language in your life. Does that play any significant role in your life?
What?
Language?
Language? Just language? I don't. I think it's very important. And as I said with the mill, you know, you have to know who's around you. And try to, you know, let's make that work. And I am a constantly police myself in the mill, and I still find myself doing it now.
Yeah.
Just because people haven't necessarily had the advantages of the higher education or whatever. I think as far as the English language goes, it's huge.
Yeah. And so that's something that you're still mindful of to this day.
Well, where I work now, it's similar.
Okay.
You know, and you know, I'm not putting anybody down. They just come from a different place than me. And one of the things I do is I write technical documents. I write standard operating procedures, and but I try to make sure that I'm communicating with my audience, who are the guys that work, that I supervise in the laboratory, who come from construction background or, you know, that sort of thing. But they're not, they don't have a background. They don't have the science background, laboratory background, analytical background. So I police my language, and yet they still, you know, say stuff that implies that they think I'm very smart. And you know, I just want to be folks, but they, you know, they'll ask me questions about stuff they don't know, and I also do training. The guys who want to sit for their state licenses, I've done training in-house so that they can pass their exams to their licenses are for wastewater and water treatment.
Okay.
So even though I try to hide my light under a bushel, I guess it peeks out everywhere.
Right. No, I hear you.
But the language that I use, again, I do want to make sure that when I'm explaining things, I meet people where they are.
And you had mentioned this sort of previously, but I always sort of like to wrap up, you know, the interviews by asking folks how they've seen Lewiston change over time, or Lewiston Auburn change over time. So just curious, you know, after going through this interview and thinking about some stories of when you first moved there and thinking about what it's like now, what are some things that stand out to you?
Well, the biggest thing is seeing people who have the same skin color as me. That's huge because, you know, I just never saw it. And community is evolving. As far as it's getting younger, And I think that the, you know, you can't rely on working in a mill anymore. Some people, they grew up, their parents worked in the mill, they worked in the mill, they expect their kids to work in the mill. And the opportunities for employment are more diverse. And I hope that that is encouraging younger people to realize that they can't just sit back and do nothing and expect to have a job. You have to get education or do an internship or something like that. So I guess I see it becoming younger, the community becoming younger, and of course more diverse. People are willing to work together. Not all people. Some people just never will. But you know, I think language is still a big barrier for people who can't speak English. That's a big barrier. But I know that the city is doing things to try to mitigate, you know, that sort of thing.
And then I always like to wrap up the question of, is there anything that I haven't asked that you think I should have, or that's important, to know?
I think that the question would be, how do I fit in to Lewiston? And I feel like I am neither here nor there. I am neither, you know, French Canadian, nor am I a recent immigrant. So I'm kind of in this no man's land as far as the city is working very hard with the immigrant population to work on things like language, education, school. I haven't figured out what I need to do to feel like a part of the community. I don't feel like I'm not a part of the immigrant community. And I'm not a part of the French Canadian community. Now, in the past, I knew that there was them, the French Canadian, and there was me. But now there's another community. And I still don't feel like I'm a part of the Lewiston community. One of the things I'm doing, I'll be retiring next month. Thank you. And I am a Red Cross volunteer. I've been a volunteer for 13 years. And the main thing I want to do, because I have more time, is to get out into the community to do more emergency preparedness training for the residents, different demographics, the elder, you know, the older populations who are in their homes, as well as the newer Lewistonians. And I think that will give me a feeling of being in the community. So I'm going to make my own, you know, I'm not just sitting back saying, well, ooh, I'm not part of the community. I'm going to make it so that I am.